Hey, everybody. Welcome Hello. To another week at My Favorite Friendship. I'm Brian Wohl.
And I'm Mark Musinski.
My Favorite Friendship is a true friendship podcast where two best friends talk about real friendships in history that will inspire us and let us know how to become better friends as we learn about amazing friendships in the world. I think I got that.
Yeah.
I don't know. We should probably write it down and have like a real copy that it's where it like makes sense.
I'm enjoying this theme where we all try to explain it and then end with a question mark.
Well, it's like, you know, true murder podcast. This is a true friendship podcast.
Definitely.
You know, it's like that.
So how is your friend week?
It was good. I went to Trader Joe's today with Alyssa, and we were making conversation with the checker, mm-hmm. the cashier, and he was asking, you know, we were loading up. We were getting like 2 weeks worth of groceries. So this dude, we had a lot of time to talk with the cashier. How do you chat with the cashier? What do you do?
I don't know. I guess I usually try to meet them where they are, because sometimes they don't seem like they want to talk too much. But often they'll comment on some food we're getting and then we'll talk about that. What do you usually do?
I try to make them laugh usually, but today he was just, I don't know, it seemed like just genuine conversation. So we were just kind of chatting back and forth, talking about our weekends. It's something I really enjoy, because I go to the grocery store, you know, usually every week. This time I'm stocking up a little extra because of the holiday. And I don't know, it's just, it's something that is a friendly interaction. And it's not really like a deep friendship. I think I've had a couple of friendships with grocery clerks. There was Fatouche at Food for Less.
Mm-hmm.
Her and I would talk every week. And she ended up getting transferred to another store than the Food for Less that I used to go to. But I love chatting with her every week. Just catching up.
What you're describing is how I interact with Uber drivers,
oh,
which I know is a
okay.
very unpopular stance. But as a person who can't drive because I'm visually impaired, well, before the pandemic, I would Uber often when I couldn't take public transit to places, which is a lot of places in Los Angeles. And so I would end up spending a lot of time with Uber drivers, and I will almost always sit up front, unless they obviously, you know, ask me not to. And I will almost always try to talk to them if they seem open to conversation. And I've learned so many interesting things and heard about so many different experiences that way that I'm sad that nobody else agrees with me on this point.
I love talking to Uber drivers. I'm with you, man. When I used to Uber a bunch when Alyssa and I didn't live together and she was in Highland Park, I would chat with the Uber drivers because, you know, I'm in there for like 40 minutes. Of course, we're going to have a chat about whatever's going on.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of them come from totally different points of view that I may or may not agree with. So it's finding common ground is interesting sometimes. But as soon as we do, and even sometimes if we don't, I'll just let them run on whatever they believe. And it's just cool to hear someone else's perspective. And, you know, and why they think that way and how they feel about stuff. I don't know. I like a good grocery clerk, Uber driver, random person, letting that inform your life a little bit. It's a short friendship, but it's not an invaluable one.
Yeah, I think these type of friendships are incredibly important in people's lives and getting through their day, because you have to have these small interactions when you're not really getting these deep interactions as an adult. We don't get a whole lot of deep interactions all the time. You know, I barely see you because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So, but before that, even it's hard to see friends all the time. So these people in your neighborhood, these people in your daily life that you run into, it counts for something. It's important.
Well, my friendship this week was not a brief one at all.
Oh yeah, what's it about?
Well, I mean, it was many years. I don't know if I'd say many decades, but I'd say a decade or so. And it is the friendship between Marilyn Monroe and Ella Fitzgerald.
Oh, how cool. I didn't know they were friends.
Yeah, in fact, not only were they friends, but Marilyn Monroe was once asked who her favorite singer was, and her response was, "Well, my very favorite person. And I love her as a person as well as a singer. I think she's the greatest." And that's Ella Fitzgerald.
Well, how about that?
So clearly, Ella Fitzgerald made some kind of impression. And they first, I didn't know they were friends before this either. And I heard about their friendship in the context of this story. So then I had to kind of go back and figure out, like, how did they meet and stuff? And apparently, Marilyn Monroe first heard of Ella Fitzgerald in the, like, early 1950s because Marilyn Monroe's vocal coach had given her some Ella Fitzgerald records as recommendations to help Monroe improve her own singing. And Marilyn Monroe was like, oh my God, this woman is incredible. Her voice is like the best. And so in November of 1954, Ella Fitzgerald was set to perform live in LA at the Tiffany Club, I believe. And Marilyn Monroe was like, I gotta see her live. And so Marilyn Monroe rolled up to the Tiffany Club, saw Ella Fitzgerald. It was even better live. So she went backstage and she was like, I had to introduce myself. And the two became pretty fast friends, actually.
That's really amazing. I love how many of our friendships that we've covered have started with someone genuinely admiring another person and then taking the time to say how much they appreciate their work or whatever it is that they create or are doing. That's the beginning of the friendship.
And I think the difference, I'm sure there's lots of times where people are like, hey, I love what you do. And they're like, cool, I love what you do. And then they just stand there in awkward silence for a while and then part ways. But it seems like the common thread in a lot of these is finding something deeper than that to engage in. And Ella Fitzgerald and Marilyn Monroe actually had some stuff in common that I think probably helped them bond, not the least of which was they both had pretty traumatic childhoods. Marilyn Monroe grew up during the Depression. She never knew who her real dad was. Her mom was mentally unstable, and they moved around a lot. And depending on who her mom had over, Marilyn Monroe was a victim of sexual assault. And sort of similarly, Ella Fitzgerald lost her mom at 15, and shortly after her stepfather became abusive. And so Ella went to live with an aunt in Harlem. And this was cool. I knew a little bit about Ella Fitzgerald, but I didn't know this part. She left school early because she had to earn money, and she took a lot of questionably legal jobs. Like, she was a brothel lookout for a while.
A brothel lookout?
Yeah.
A brothel lookout.
So questionably legal is the wrong term. That's a straight up illegal job, I believe. But because she was truant from school, she eventually got caught and she was sent to a segregated reform school in upstate New York that was just a horrible place. And they used to brutalize the residents. The former superintendent of the school admitted to the New York Times at one point that during Ella Fitzgerald's time there, students would be locked in the basement of one of the cottages and tortured.
Whoa. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Needless to say, they both had a lot of stuff in their past that they were sort of overcoming. And I think that strength that they both had to show in order to do that is part of what drew them to each other. And even though Fitzgerald did not talk about her past as much as Monroe did, they had to at least appreciate someone else who could understand that depth of pain. And that sort of struggle against so many fucked up institutions in the world. But they also had some other similarities, too, that weren't as dark. They both had very early and very unsuccessful marriages. And they each had ultimately found success as a performer. And they also hit a lot of the... They both ran into a lot of the hurdles of stardom. And so by this point in the 1950s, when they met, Ella Fitzgerald was getting booked at smaller jazz clubs, even though she was really well known by this point. But a lot of the bigger places just wouldn't allow her to perform there, and for a variety of reasons. But a lot of it was obviously her skin color and also her figure as a larger woman. And so she despite being one of the most talented people ever, was having a lot of trouble breaking out of this sort of small jazz club circuit. And she even once lamented to her publicist, somewhere on the record, that she, quote, wishes she could play one of those fancy places. And when Marilyn Monroe heard that Ella Fitzgerald was unable to get booked at Mocambo,
yeah, Mocambo,
which was one of the hottest nightclubs in L.A., when she heard that they wouldn't book Ella Fitzgerald, she decided she was going to do something about it. And so there is a little bit of doubt about what happened next, because some people have dug into Marilyn Monroe's, you know, travel records or whatever, and they said this may not be possible. But the way that Ella Fitzgerald described the story to Ms. Magazine is that, well, so first off, Marilyn Monroe was annoyed because Ella Fitzgerald would not have even been the first black woman to perform at Mocambo. They had Dorothy Dandridge had performed there, and so had Eartha Kitt in the past. And so when Marilyn Monroe confronted the owner of Mocambo, who I guess either she knew or had access to just by virtue of being famous, his reasoning was actually, well, what he said, I think, was that he was worried Ella Fitzgerald wasn't, quote, glamorous enough to draw a crowd, which I think, you know, obviously is a coded reference to his opinion of both her figure and her skin color.
I think that's exactly right. I'm looking at stuff about this Mocambo, and it is it's an interesting club. It says they had live cockatoos, macaws, seagulls, pigeons, and parrots.
Yeah,
just around. It's wacky.
Imagine trying to sing there, getting like your chorus, your backup singers are just a bunch of parrots repeating whatever you said. But apparently it was the hottest place to be. And if you could get booked there, you know, everywhere else you went, you'd be like, well, she played the Mocambo in L.A. And they'd be like, well, shit, we got to get her in the good venue here.
Yeah, I guess Bugs Bunny even parodied it. It was in the cartoon.
In what cartoon?
Slick Hair.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We'll have to get a link for that.
It said that the animators managed to get into the kitchen and drew the kitchen exactly as they saw it, complete with dripping grease on the refrigerator and vegetables lying on the ground.
Oh, God, that's horrifying.
Mocambo. So I'm so sorry that Ella Fitzgerald wasn't classy enough for Mocambo and their kitchen.
Yeah, it was one of those fancy places, quote unquote.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, despite however Mocambo looked behind the scenes, clearly it was still a beacon of performance venues in front of the scenes. So Monroe made a deal with the owner. And what she said was, if he booked Ella Fitzgerald, Marilyn Monroe would sit front row every night and bring as many of her celebrity friends as she could. And with a deal like that, the guy was like, okay, fine. So he booked Ella Fitzgerald for March of 1955, which, you know, they met in November of 1954. So Marilyn Monroe was very quick on the uptake here, which I think is commendable. Like, she saw a thing that she felt was an injustice and she was like, fuck it, I'm going to do something about this.
Yeah, Marilyn Monroe, it, you know, there's not a whole lot I, you know, I wasn't there, but it seems like from everything I've read and seen about her, it seems like she was a pretty pure soul and wanted to really help people and was genuine and kind.
Yeah, especially considering the challenges she faced growing up and the discrimination and I'm sure sexism she faced within the industry and as an icon. As one of the biggest celebrity of her time, certainly, or one of the. She had enough reasons to just go sit in a mansion somewhere and do nothing. But instead, she was like, I'm going to go out and see live music, and I want to see my favorite performer. And apparently, Monroe kept her word. And so according to the story, and again, there is some debate about whether this happened, but it's a great story, so I've decided to just believe it. Apparently, Marilyn Monroe showed up opening night with Frank Sinatra and Judy Garland, and kept people coming every night for the rest of the run.
Frank Sinatra and Judy Garland, you mean members of the Rat Pack?
Yes, I was wondering if you would catch that. So if a Rat Pack episode has aired, check that out because you'll learn a lot about Frank Sinatra and Judy Garland. And if it hasn't, what a cool teaser we just accidentally did.
Hey, how about it?
But here's the fun part. The celebrities weren't even necessary. Because by the time that Ella Fitzgerald's show opened, she had already sold out all of the dates and they had extended her contract by a week. So even the publicity about the Sinatras and Garlands of the world didn't matter because all those tickets were gone and fuck that Mocambo guy.
Most definitely. Mocambo closed in 1958, so they didn't last that long. And we're still talking about Ella Fitzgerald and Marilyn Monroe today. So take that, Mocambo. I guess we're talking about Mocambo today, too.
Yeah.
But oh well.
And that opportunity that Fitzgerald was looking for completely paid off. So once she had Mocambo on the resume, she never had to play another small club again unless she wanted to. So Mocambo opened the doors to her to play all of the similar venues. But one of the tricky parts is that now that she was booking the bigger venues, she was also facing a lot of the same similar racist practices that these bigger venues were known for. And again, if you've checked out that Rat Pack episode, Sammy Davis Jr. had some of these same experiences where, you know, obviously she was always fighting to be paid comparably to white musicians and to male musicians. She was often given much worse dressing rooms. She was not given the same food and treatment by the staff. She had to enter through a side door instead of the front door, that same door that her name was on the marquee of. And so Monroe actually jumped in to help Ella Fitzgerald again on a trip to Colorado to see Fitzgerald perform, which, just to show you how big of a fan she was like the people following the Fish tour, apparently. Just going to Ella Fitzgerald shows on the road.
Hey, man, I'd follow Ella Fitzgerald. She's pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well, so in Colorado, Monroe's there seeing her friend, and they get to the front doors, and the staff is like, oh, I'm sorry, Miss Fitzgerald, you can't go in this door. You have to come around to the side. And Marilyn Monroe just said no. And she said she was going to stand in front of the building and not go inside until she and Ella Fitzgerald could both enter through the same door. And she was famous enough and stubborn enough that she got her way. And after that, apparently, Fitzgerald got a lot of other venues to treat her the same way and more respectfully, which I think is also really impressive. That the fact that other people listen to that, I don't know. I mean, we're living in a time where there's a lot of people calling for better behavior. And seeing in this story, or at least in Ella Fitzgerald's telling of this story, that getting one person to behave better does set an example and create a domino effect that will help others to behave better gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah, it shows the power of allyship and how allies have a responsibility and a place in this whole situation. And if you do have privilege, you can use it to help others.
It also, to me, shows the lameness of the resistance against it, because it's like, you can't use the front door. It's just not what we do. And then, like, one person gets them to let her use the front door, and everyone's like, well, I guess it's not that bad at all. It's not a big deal in any way, and it's totally fine to do. But for the amount of resistance and discrimination that goes into making that policy, it's truly like a pulling back the curtain, and the wizard is just a guy pulling some levers. And I hope that what Ella experienced is something that can happen for everyone and today and as soon as possible.
Now, did Ella and Marilyn ever collaborate on a film or recording project at all?
There are some great videos of them performing together. What's interesting to me is that Marilyn Monroe is very talented, but she's not the singer that Ella Fitzgerald is. So it's really fascinating to watch their collaborations, because sometimes it's mostly Ella singing or Ella and another performer singing, and Marilyn is singing a little bit and mostly dancing and kind of being a front person, like a figurehead. I'll find some links and put them in. And then there's another one. There's a really, really horrifying Marilyn Monroe song. And I forget what it's called, but it's something about Daddy. It's like the music video for it is this beautifully choreographed dance where all these guys are asking her out and she's like, sorry. Oh, it's called My Heart Belongs to Daddy.
All right. Okay.
But apparently Ella Fitzgerald performs in that as well.
Wow.
And the two stayed great friends. But the one thing that did unfortunately keep them apart was Marilyn Monroe's drug use, which increased and accelerated toward the end of her life.
What drugs was she on? What was she doing?
She was doing a lot of stuff. She was doing a lot of drinking and I believe pills. Let me see if I can find it officially.
Like what were the happening drugs in the 50s? What was what was that all about?
Let's find out. Let's see here.
It was the 50s, right? Yeah, it was 50s.
Yeah. I know like amphetamines were a big deal.
Oh, yeah, amphetamines. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, Monroe had been dependent on amphetamines, barbiturates, and alcohol. And she explained, as she explained her various mental health problems, that depression, anxiety, and low self-esteem, and chronic insomnia, which I'm sure drinking a lot did not help. But Ella Fitzgerald, on the other hand, didn't drink. She didn't like smoking. She also even shied away from songs that made references to drugs and drinking.
Oh, okay.
Some of that could have been because I assume some of the abuses in her childhood were brought upon by relatives who were drinking or who were using drugs. And it said when Ella Fitzgerald needed to relax, she would just turn on a soap opera. And she would just kick back and watch a soap opera for like an hour or so.
Well, I'm very glad that soap operas were able to relax Ella Fitzgerald. That is a much stronger will than most of us.
Yes. But unfortunately, Monroe had her own struggles with pills and with alcohol. It's how she coped with the stress of her career and all of the mental health issues that we were just talking about. And unfortunately, she died of an overdose at the age of 36 on August 5th, 1962. Which means 36 in 62, meaning she was 28 when she was first sticking up for Ella Fitzgerald.
That shows a maturity beyond her years. I mean, this just... It's good to hear. It's nice to hear some good things about people.
And apparently, despite the things keeping them apart, they did remain friends until her death. Although Fitzgerald, along with a lot of other people, did not attend Marilyn Monroe's funeral because Joe DiMaggio, Monroe's second husband, handled all the arrangements. And he didn't want Monroe's celebrity friends and acquaintances to attend a very small, intimate service.
Thanks, Joe.
But Fitzgerald never forgot Monroe's kindness, and in 1972, she told Ms. Magazine that she owes Marilyn Monroe a real debt. Monroe was a fan and a friend, and she used her status in Hollywood to help Fitzgerald get the opportunities she so well deserved. And I, as a fan of both of them, am super grateful that she did that.
Me too. We needed Ella Fitzgerald's voice. I need it often. I listen to Ella at least once a week.
Oh, yeah. It's one of my favorite things to throw on.
I'll put it on while I'm cooking.
Same. Yeah. Jazz music and that and like 50s, you know, standards and musicians is one of my favorite things to like cook to or clean to.
It's very, very comforting, but also very pleasant. Upbeat. Keep you moving. Keep you working through whatever boom is going on at the time.
I think my favorite part of that story is the moment where it's like Marilyn Monroe brings all the celebrity friends, but the place was already sold out. You know, Fitzgerald was doing well beforehand. She was playing small clubs. She was making a living. She was well known. It was just the entire system that wasn't treating her equally and on par with others of her popularity, and certainly not on par with others of her talent.
Yeah, I mean... But I think what's so fun, too, is that both of these women had a tremendous impact on the world of entertainment. And it's so inspiring to see two people who had a tremendous impact come together and help one another to have a greater impact.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm sure listening to those Ella Fitzgerald recordings helped Marilyn Monroe sing in a bunch. I'm sure collaborating was a fucking blast. And I hope that one day I can do as many fun things together that they got to do.
Yeah.
And that's it. Do you have any other questions or any themes jumping out to you?
Can you please make sure to share some of those videos on the webpage?
Totally. But everyone, just really brace yourself for My Heart Belongs to Daddy.
Okay. All right. We will. We will. But yeah, please post it. I want to see this.
Will do. And for everyone listening, thank you so much. Please go listen to some Ella Fitzgerald. Listen to some Marilyn Monroe, too. And make sure to comment, share your thoughts. Let us know any other cool friendships you've heard of. were My Favorite Friendship on all the places you can get podcasts and on all the social networks, except Twitter, which is My Fav Friendship because of their character limit. And I'm at Mark Musinski. Brian's at Brian Wool. And you guys are our favorite people. So we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.